We will now have a further contribution from our friend, another man who is very clear, Judge Weeramantry, who I should have said earlier is actually president of the International Association of Lawyers Against Nuclear Arms, ILANA, but I should have mentioned that he was the recipient of the UNESCO 2006 Award for Achievement in Peace Education. And we congratulate him on that. Judge Weeramantry.
I have listened with great fascination to the masterly analysis that Louise has made of humanitarian law and its applicability in the context of the opinion of the International Court. But I would like to make this discussion a little broader than purely humanitarian law, because humanitarian law is only one branch of customary international law. Customary international law is a much broader concept, and humanitarian law is a sub-department or a section within it. But there are a number of basic principles of customary international law that are also involved when we consider the effects of nuclear weapons. So I don't think we should concentrate only on humanitarian law. I'll just read you a few of the principles that are relevant to our discussion. The prohibition against indiscriminate killing of civilians, that's humanitarian law. The prohibition against the causing of cruel and unnecessary suffering, humanitarian law. Now, there are other principles, the prohibition against genocide. These principles would automatically come into operation if, for example, a bomb should be dropped upon a populated city with a million people. The rules of jus cogens in relation to genocide would come into operation. Then the prohibition against environmental damage, the prohibition against intergenerational damage, the prohibition against the use of noxious gases and analogous material, that's humanitarian law, the prohibition against causing damage to neutral states. Now, there are two belligerent states firing nuclear bombs at each other, but neutral states who are not in the least concerned in their conflict are irretrievably damaged. Now, there is a basic principle of customary international law that belligerents should not damage non-combatants in non-combatant states. Then the nullification of a return to peaceful coexistence and cooperation. The whole purpose of war is, of course, you have your war, you have your dispute, by superior military force, you establish that you are the correct party in the dispute. But after that, you have got to live in peace with each other. So a nuclear weapon nullifies very often the possibility of a return to peace owing to the irretrievable damage and the massive scale of the damage that is caused. The prohibition against damage to medical centers, for example, as was told to us by Dr. Cyril this morning, the medical ability to cope with nuclear weapons is totally inadequate. It's totally inadequate to the magnitude of the demands that will be made of the entire system. and the whole international medical system would not be able to cope with the use of one nuclear weapon and the medical consequences of it, and also damage to centers of religious worship, damage to cultural objects, and so on. You can give a whole list of principles of customary international law, some of which are principles of humanitarian law, which would be violated by the bomb. Now, why do we say so? Because here are just a few effects of the bomb. They cause death and destruction on an unprecedented scale, Hiroshima, 140,000 killed, and so forth. They cause congenital deformities, mental retardation, and genetic damage for generations. They have the potential to cause a nuclear winter and blur out the sunlight. They damage the environment, not only for the present generation, but for many generations to come. They contaminate and destroy the food chain. They produce multiple medical effects, including cancer, leukemia, keloids, and related afflictions, as well as gastrointestinal, cardiovascular, and so on. They continue for decades to come. They imperil the ecosystem. They produce lethal levels of heat and blast. They produce radiation and radioactive fallout. They produce a destructive electromagnetic pulse, which puts out all, shuts out all communication and breaks down all internal systems. They span a time range of thousands of years, the half-life of plutonium being 20,000 years and so on. They can produce social disintegration. They irreversibly damage the rights of future generations. They imperil civilization, etc. One could go on with an unending list of these consequences. So those are the consequences that have to be examined in the light of the applicable principles of international law. Now, those principles, I would say one should not be too legalistic in looking only at the humanitarian principles, and also look at it, one should look at it in a broader way. And the humanitarian principles are based upon traditions that have come down for thousands of years, really, but even over the last few hundred years. And in recent times, we have, even in the Crimean War, there were prohibitions of the use of weapons involving sulfur. Then the Martens Clause, which was worked out and which gives us the real basis on which we consider humanitarian law. Usagers established among civilized people, persons, the laws of humanity and the dictates of the public conscience. The dictates of the public conscience would tell us that it is absolutely unacceptable to kill and maim hundreds of thousands of children, absolutely unacceptable to damage the environment, absolutely unacceptable to kill various life forms and so forth, or to interfere with the food chain. All that becomes self-evidently negatived and contradicted and condemned by principles of customary international law. So I would plead for looking at the whole problem in the larger context of the principles of customary international law, of which at least a dozen can be advanced, which will show that the nuclear weapon stands condemned by every humanitarian consideration, as well as every consideration of coexistence among nations. Now, of course, when a nuclear weapon is exploded, one cannot say in which direction the wind will drift the radioactive components of it. But it is certainly on the cards. It is known to those who use the weapon that this is a probable consequence. One may not know in which direction the contamination will go, but certainly it will be diffused over a much wider area than the immediate area of conflict. Certainly it will be diffused over a much longer period of time than the lifetimes of all involved. Certainly it will involve the destruction of life forms other than human forms, and so on. So the effects are clearly foreseeable. When the effects are clearly foreseeable, then those rules come into automatic operation. And it is useful to remember also that the United States was very much in the forefront of the evolution of these rules. There was, for example, the request of President Lincoln to Professor Lieber to formulate the principles of humanitarian law that were then embodied in the U.S. military manuals. There are statements by President Woodrow Wilson in regard to humanitarian law, and that is worth recounting. President Wilson said, by painful stage after stage has that law been built up, with meager results indeed, but always with a clear view of what the heart and conscience of mankind demanded. So nuclear weapons absolutely destroy what the heart and conscience of mankind demand, namely principles of peace and coexistence in a harmonious relationship, which can continue after the hostilities have ceased. So all of those are factors which I think broaden the ambit of the debate and bring in a number of considerations which are not confined to humanitarian law considerations. Of course, it can be demonstrated through humanitarian law as well that the nuclear weapon is totally unacceptable, but one can go beyond that and should go beyond that. So I think that this discussion has been most helpful in focusing attention, and Louise is one of the great masters of our time in relation to humanitarian law. She has probably made one of the most detailed studies of it, and we are very grateful for her presentation today. But I would like to take the discourse outside the ambit of humanitarian law and bring it to the touchstone of customary international law, which, as I have said over and over again, is a very rich repository of general principles. They have come down to us through the ages, and it is for us to draw upon those general principles when a situation arises for which there is no existing prohibition in specific terms. We then look at the general principle and see what the general principle has to offer us, and there we will find enlightenment as to the basis of the prohibition and the reason for the prohibition. So I'm very grateful for this discussion that has taken place. But we should also bear in mind the broader context of customary international law. And once we do so, I think there will be no question but that the use of nuclear weapons in any circumstances whatsoever is absolutely prohibited. Thank you.
Radio News Bursa Studios in Belgium.